So, Lily, how did the London Radio Group come about?
So, I'm sorry, my boyfriend's unloading the dishwasher. Hold on a second.
Don't think I won't keep that in, by the way.
Which is very kind of him, but not what we need right now. He just started. Hold on a second.
Greg, it's picking that up, okay? Don't unload the dishwasher.
The Radio Today program with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Hello, I'm Trevor Dan. This is the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk, and we'll hear more from the splendid Lily Ames in a minute. We've got the latest UK radio news and a look back at this week in radio history, as always. But first, the London Radio Group. It's a novel initiative which aims to connect radio and audio professionals in the UK with people who might want to employ them, commission them, or collaborate with them. And it's the brainchild of the aforementioned Lily Ames, who's a Canadian producer based in London. Let's go back and see if she's finished bollocking her boyfriend.
Okay, I'm back. Okay. I'll pick up.
That's put him in his place. Let me do that again.
Sure.
So Lily Ames, the London Radio Group, how did it all start?
It's inspired by a group that actually exists in the US. It's kind of confusing because I'm not actually American, I'm Canadian. But this group, which is called the New York Radio Group, Public Radio Group, it kind of operates to serve the entire North American market and even beyond. And I was starting to see more and more posts on that group that was call-outs for London and UK-based jobs and just people who were kind of asking, hey, does anyone know the name of the London equivalent? And I thought, well, one doesn't exist, so I better create one.
So who's joined up so far?
As of today, I think we have 299 people. It's a mix of, I would say, medium to high-level professional audio people working in the audio scene. So we have a mix from your more kind of traditional BBC producers to podcast producers to people who work in new actors like Spotify, Audible. And it's taken a bit of curation to try to bring all these different groups together. So it definitely is taking a little bit too much of my time to kind of spread the word and I wouldn't say handpick, but it's more like really specify what types of people working in the audio industry would work best in the group. And I'm really trying to also reach out to other industries and people in other industries that might be interested in producing podcasts. So TV production companies and film production companies, and maybe people who work in TV and film who are kind of thinking about producing a podcast and kind of want to get a sense of the industry. So they join just to kind of see the chatter in the group to see what's out there.
Lily, give us an idea what you've done in your career. You know, what's your radio background?
Sure. I started off at the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and I worked all over the CBC in the music department, news department, local radio, documentary. And that sounds like I've been working this my whole life, but that was just over 3 years. But the CBC is just like the BBC where there are no real jobs. So people kind of just move from one department to the other, wherever there's work. Then I moved to London 3 years ago. And to give you a sense of when I moved to London, I think Serial was on its fourth episode. So I had originally come to London to work, well, hopefully work for the BBC, but I kind of got swept up in all this podcast excitement. So over the last 3 years, I've been working in branded podcasting and kind of a lot of podcast consulting for people who want to set up their own podcasts. And then also doing piecemeal freelance documentary type work.
Now, it occurs to me that the London Radio Group might be the basis for some new events. Back in my day at the Radio Academy, we used to do what we called the London Events, which was basically a monthly get together and we'd have speakers and workshops and talks of one sort or another. And that's pretty much lapsed. Have you thought of using the LRG, as I'm now calling it, as a sort of centre around which you could grow some events and a bit more sort of workshopping?
Yeah, definitely. I think originally I had set it up as more of an online space, and I was really trying to push this open knowledge and knowledge sharing ethos. So I was really trying to push sharing documents and using shared databases to put in all the names of all the audio producers and then also all the commissioners and kind of really tracking all the data that's out there. But then people were like, cool, when are the events? So that's not really something that I initially intended, but you know, everyone wants to meet people and everyone wants to go out. So we've had a couple pub nights and then everyone's kind of been putting in their two cents and everyone has these great ideas for other events. And we've just started something called London Listserv Meets, where various companies or people who are just kind of in groups that are in the position to commission audio, they'll host whoever wants to come from the group and kind of just give information about what they're all about and how audio producers can get involved. So that's been, we've got lots of interest and lots of events. I've already got about 3 or 4 companies signed up and kind of eager to go. And that's just, we just kind of just started that. The first one was last week.
So Lily, how do people engage with your group and find out more details?
As of now, it's a little bit word of mouth, but it's spreading really fast. And I go to certain people who are gatekeepers and I say, can you spread this to your entire network of professional audio producers? And that's where the kind of curation comes in. So it's kind of complicated because at this point, there's not an easy way to get involved. But the whole point of the group is that it should be open to everyone. You know, I've written a manifesto and I'm going to rewrite it again. And it's very much something that promotes openness and transparency. And I really want to connect all sorts of groups across audio production that I felt were kind of disconnected. Maybe a good way as of now, you can find me on Twitter at Lily Ames and just send me a quick tweet and I will add you.
Yeah.
And then going forward, I'm really trying to work on a way that, you know, we have a clear online presence.
All right,
join.
Lily. Well, look, thank you very much for your time. And you can get the dishwasher cleared now.
And, thank you.
We wish you every success with the London Radio Group. And we're going to have the latest UK radio news now with Stu Clarkson.
Yes, thank you, Trevor. The Radio Academy has a new chair and deputy chair this week. Yvonne Thompson is taking over the main role from Chris Burns when she steps down in April after 3 years. The current deputy chair, Steve Parkinson, will be replaced by John Dash. Yvonne was a director and founding member of the team at Choice FM, and John has been a programmer at stations and groups including Piccadilly, Wave 105, UTV and Bauer. A former head of government communications is joining Radio Centre as its non-executive chair. Howell James was also political secretary to Prime Minister John Major in the 90s. Before that, he'd been head of promotions at Capital Radio in the late 70s and director of corporate affairs at the BBC in the 80s. He takes over from Kip Meek at Radio Centre. Chelsea Norris is going back on breakfast in Manchester and up against her old co-host Mike Toulon. She's taking over the BBC Radio Manchester breakfast show after a year doing Drive there. Phil Trowe moves to the Drive Time show, while Alison Butterworth returns to Radio Lancashire. Q Radio in Northern Ireland has increased the size of its coverage area with 5 FM licence extensions. It's added Larne, Newcastle, Draperstown, Enniskillen and Ballycastle to the 7 regions it already serves. The station's made up of former stations including City Beat in Belfast, 5 FM, 6 FM and 7 FM. And tributes have been paid this week to the founding chairman of Essex Radio, David Keddy, who's died at the age of 88. He created the station in 1981 and was chair for the first 10 years that it was on the air. And there's a lot more radio news from throughout the week at radiotoday.co.uk.
Thank you, Stu. David Lloyd after this.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
David Lloyd's Radio Moments. When Capital Radio began in 1973, AM listening was huge. So imagine the frustration when they were told they couldn't launch on their permanent AM wavelength. Thanks to a planning problem, 194 wasn't yet possible, so they were down at 539 until this week in 1975.
You're listening on the wavelength which, until recently, temporarily carried the medium wave service of Capital Radio, the independent local radio, general and entertainment service for the London area. You may like to know that Capital Radio medium wave service is now available only on the new wavelength, 194 meters.
You don't have to pick up a phone to get 539. It's on your radio dial, you silly person! Any time of day or night, 539 for your delight.
Capital Radio moving from its temporary wavelength of 539 this week, 43 years ago. The temporary transmitters had been at Lotts Road Power Station with an aerial slung between two chimneys, and thus began the mighty Capital. Mind you, in those early days, it was a very different place.
8 minutes to six, coming up at 6 o'clock, it's Sue Denny and Simon Preble with a 30-minute roundup of what's been happening in the capital today. London's Day, at 6:30, it'll be Nicky Horn, and your mother wouldn't like it. But I think she'll like this, Val Dunigan, and Here, There and Everywhere.
Did he just say Dunigan?
Val Dunigan.
He did, didn't he? Mind you, I suspect he didn't like playing that song. Anyway, goodness, what a difference a lifetime makes for a radio station. We all have our favourite chart show host, and for a generation, that host is Mark Goodyear. His first rundown began this week, 30 years ago.
It's Jack and Chill down seven places at 18 this week, and here comes this week's sixth new entry. It's the Sisters of Mercy who are straight in at...
More to the point, Mark, what was number one, for goodness sake?
Kylie Minogue with her second week as Britain's number one with I Should Be So Lucky. And if you'd like to have a go at forecasting next week's top three, put your choice on a postcard together with your name and address and send it to Top Three Forecast, BBC Radio 1, London...
It seems so long, doesn't it, since writing on a postcard or a sealed-down envelope. Mark Goodyear hosting the Radio 1 Top 40 for the first time this week in 1988. This week last year, Steve Hewlett died. He'd been a much respected print and radio journalist and heard in recent years on the media show. Eddie Mair broke the news on air.
We've thought a great deal about what to do now, and we concluded there was no voice we'd rather hear right now, this Monday evening, than Steve himself from these past few months.
Well, I've got cancer. I've got cancer of the oesophagus, near where the oesophagus joins the stomach. It was discovered back at the very beginning of March. Prior to that, I suppose, going back over...
Steve Hewlett, a long story cut short. He was 58. Steve died this morning and his family issued a statement. Let me read part of it to you. It says, "Over the last year, we've been overwhelmed by the support of friends, colleagues and Radio 4 listeners. The message has helped Steve enormously, especially over the last few months."
The death of Steve Hewlett, an intelligent, authentic communicator and a great interrogator too. The PM programme had followed Steve's condition, as did its listeners, including the case of one listener who heard Steve's story on radio and got themselves checked and treated. 1975 now, Margaret Thatcher has just become Conservative Party leader, and who does she choose to be her first interviewer? JY on Radio 2.
Today she's with me in the studio preparing to talk about the victory and indeed about the future that we can expect from the new style Conservative Party. First of all, nice to have you back again, Margaret.
It's very nice to be back. I thoroughly enjoy these programmes and look forward to being on them frequently.
Good. Now, as I said...
What's the recipe today, Margaret? Margaret Thatcher's first interview as party leader on the JY Prog this week in 1975. It's 10 years this week since Adrian Van Claveren was appointed controller of BBC Five Live. He had been BBC Deputy Director of News. Adrian was to oversee the move of the station to Media City.
I think the sound comes from something much wider than just the presenters. They're an important part of it, but the sound also comes from what subjects you talk about, how you choose to talk about them, who the interviewees are, how that's put together, what judgments you make about what programmes you do. If you look at Five Live in 3 years' time, I think you'll be able to say that Five Live is actually demonstrably more different on many of those things than it is from the rest of the BBC News agenda than it is at the moment.
Adrian Van Claveren, and 7 years on now since the move to Media City, I guess we can start to examine the impact of that change. Mind you, moving around is always controversial. 22 years ago this week, Liz Forgan, then managing director of BBC Radio, resigned over plans to move BBC Radio journalists from Broadcasting House down to White City at a cost of £41 million. Of course, they're now back again. England's first commercial radio station outside London was in Birmingham, then called BRMB. It launched this week in 1974. Like most stations, though, it changed things round now and again.
Update. BRMB's programme schedule is updated from February the 6th, and that affects not only all the music programmes, but the news and sport as well. BRMB's news service is one of the most respected in the UK for content and accuracy, and from February the 6th, it'll be even better. From February the 6th, there'll still be news on the hour every hour, day and night, right through the week. But at breakfast time and going home time in the evening, it'll be updated every 20 minutes. The news updated every 20 minutes at breakfast time and going home time. Faster, more up-to-date than ever before.
Going home time. That's what they obviously used to call drive time. Let's bring that back, shall we? So, with Mark and Lard beginning their 8 months on Radio 1 Breakfast 21 years ago...
He wants us to do the breakfast show!
Big Ben beginning his daily broadcasts 94 years ago... The launch of Murray Firth Radio in Inverness 36 years ago.
And welcome to the very first day of broadcasting from your new independent local radio station.
The death of sports commentator Raymond Glendenning 44 years ago.
Which way will this championship go? All depends on Mr. Eugene Henderson.
And One Direction famously thanking the wrong radio station at the Brits 6 years ago.
And a massive thank you to Radio 1.
Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Thanks this week to David Lloyd, also Stu Clarkson. If you want to contact Lily Ames from the London Radio Group, you can tweet her at Lily Ames. That's LILYAMES. This podcast has been a TDC production. Join us next week if you can. Thanks for listening. Ta-da.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.